Welcome to the first Pocket Gamer podcast. I'm the editor, Rob Hearn. With me is my boss and the managing director of the company, Chris James.
Hello.
And also our erstwhile video editor and now community editor, Fraser McInnes.
Hello. I could see you struggling to think of a proper role for me there, Rob. Don't worry.
I don't want to be misleading, because you're both really, aren't you?
Yeah.
You remember his name, that's all that matters. That's...
Yeah.
Yes, and the pronunciation and everything. And you're also our German editor.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so all German language stuff.
I'm avoiding German jokes.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a German joke.
Don't mention the that thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're here to talk about iPhone stuff predominantly. I think the most interesting story that's come about today relates to Flashback, which was recently ported to iPhone, I think last week, by a company. Actually, the game wasn't ported. The software for running the game was ported, and it came out last week. And it was widely criticized by everyone who played it, and they said it was rubbish. And there was actually some question over its legality as well. I don't know whether either of you guys have been following that story, or whether indeed either of you have played it. I suspect not. But what do you think about this this idea of an emulator coming out for the iPhone that enables you to play this kind of abandonware software? Does that appeal to you, Fraser?
Definitely, yeah. I don't know. People tend to get a bit precious about these sorts of things, though, I think. The reaction to Flashback, I think, was a little bit... I don't know. I mean, it's unfair because I've actually not played the game myself. But I think that, you know, this is the company that made it. Is it Monami or something? What are the name? What's the real name before I go and offend them?
Monomio.
What are they called?
Obviously.
I know.
Monomio.
Okay.
Monomio.
Yeah. Anyhow. Yeah, they were pretty transparent from the off about the fact that this was, you know, done very quickly, and it's, you know, via this emulator route, and it wasn't, you know, strictly speaking, a highly customized port of the game or anything like that. So, the beauty of the App Store is updates, so let's wait and see. Let's hope that it gets much, much better. I mean...
Yeah, but that's now there's this a whole world of abandonware out there now, isn't there? Personally, I think it's quite an intriguing development. And especially, it's unusual for what I associate with Apple, which is being really quite controlling over their content. And it would be ironic, almost, in a way, if it were the floodgate for all of these, or the portal for all of these types of old kind of abandoned Amiga and, you know, Mega Drive and Master System games to suddenly kind of appear.
When you say abandonware, I'm really old, so I remember the game initially.
so do I. It's a great game.
But like when you say abandonware, I mean, I've been following it on the site, and I've been kind of reading about it, and I think it is kind of, amazing that Apple are letting it kind of go, not there, because their usual light touch regulation of anything that's even faintly controversial, I can't believe it got through. But this is like they have the rights to produce this, presumably. It's not like one of those kind of like DS carts where you've managed to download a hooky version of, you know, Donkey Kong or something. And this is presumably not, there's no piracy involved here, or is there questionable legality?
No, I mean, I think they got in touch with Delphine about it, or the original developer, and it was approved. It was fine. But I mean, abandonware generally is just it's software that nobody has any stake in anymore.
Nobody cares about.
No one claims ownership of it.
Sorry, they rang up Delphine, and a French guy kind of shrugged over the phone and went, "Meh, whatever." And they basically just used it. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. But I mean, it's not very good. It's a key problem. So
see, yeah, that's the thing. The people that do claim ownership of it are the gamers who are pissed off that it's not very good. So there's I'm going to, if you're listening, forum posters, there's one of you that has Flashback featured heavily in your avatar, and you in particular were quite annoyed, and there was no surprises there, but I think that, you know, with this sort of thing, you know, as long as it's all, because that was the first thing that people were saying, you know, because the port wasn't up to scratch, they were instantly looking for ways to kind of to denounce it, and the obvious one was, is this legal? And as soon as it was established that it was legal, there was all sorts of to-ing and fro-ing about whether or not the address on the website was legitimate, or whether or not their phone number was actually a US number that corresponded with their US address, and all sorts of different things. And, you know, I think that we all need to just need to chillax, babe, you know what I mean? And just to wait for an update and hope that it's much better, you know? That's what I'm going to do.
There is an update, though. They've submitted it. I don't think... I wrote a news story about it about an hour ago, and as of writing, it wasn't live yet.
That is up to date. That is how up to date this podcast is. About an hour, by the time this goes out, that'll be about a week ago.
So. Yeah.
But hopefully by then it'll have been approved, this update, and it's got a full screen mode by default. It's got better controls, auto-rotate, so, you know, hopefully it'll be good. But I really want it to be good. I was gutted when I discovered that it was actually completely shit, because it is such a great game. And I love the idea that all of these old Amiga games that are virtually impossible to play now because you've got to get emulators and find the ROMs and things could suddenly become available through, thanks to Apple.
Yeah, it could be the start of a trend. And there's definitely a feature in this somewhere. I'm not going to write it.
No, but Damien already did. When it happened,
really?
I said...
We're ahead of the game.
Yeah, that's me. I'm on the ball, baby. Well, yeah, when it happened, I thought, great, retro games. So then I got Damien to write top 10 retro games that we'd like to see in the iPhone, which went live earlier this week.
Okay, what was the top
10? Very well received by the critics.
What were the top 10? Come on, you've no idea.
They're just some obscure RC old games that Damien had heard of.
I'm going to look. Use the power of the internet.
You know now, we're going to have Damien on the podcast next week so he can defend himself now.
No, they were good. He missed some out. Actually, it started a thread, which I really liked. I like this thread of comments because it's all about the suggestions that other people have got for retro games. So somebody suggested Cannon Fodder for the iPhone, which I thought would be brilliant.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
My suggestion was Robocod. I don't know why it came into my head, but I thought Robocod, but with Rolando controls, would just be perfect. Even though I didn't even like the game that much when it was out. Yeah, Robocod. So that's my tip. But there's quite a few in there. There's a kind of... People are calling out for these games to be revived.
Oh, I'm the top 10. I've searched top 10. I'm not trying to devalue our search functionality, but I can't find it.
I've got it. It's on the second page. Here, I'll send you the link, Chris. So, yeah. I'll go through what we've got. Okay, we've got at the very top, Blinky's Scary School. I might just be showing how young and youthful and wonderful I am by not knowing that. But is that obscure, or is that something I should know? Am I a gaming philistine?
It's quite obscure. Okay. I didn't know about it, I'm old enough to as well. Yeah, Damien's quite hardcore. But yeah, generally though, he got a lot of kudos for his picks.
Okay, alright, well, we've got... Go on, Fraser, what's the rest? Give us a couple of highlights.
Okay, well, shortly after that, we have... hold on a second. Right, then we have Herzog 2. I'm assuming that's a German game.
What? I've got one of their albums, I think. It's a dog rock or something.
It sounds like it, doesn't it? Yeah, it sounds like an album that was released in the late 70s.
This is those people that goes, oh, your favourite films, and it's all kind of obscure, kind of black and white Albanian classics, isn't it?
Herzog is filmmaker, of course.
Good, yeah, well done. Yeah, exactly. What's it, Werner Herzog?
Werner Herzog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's a national treasure over here, guys. Honestly, I'll not have a word said against him.
I love him. I went to see Encounters at the End of the World the other day. It was brilliant.
Was it good?
Excellent.
Okay, anyway, moving on. Moving on from obscure German filmmakers, we have... June 2, that's
okay,
obviously going to go down well. That's the
classic,
precursor to
Command
and Conquer, and yeah, so that's a good one. This one I've never seen before, it looks pretty cool. Stunt Car Racer.
Oh, yeah. You're so young!
Yeah.
I can't. This is Jeff Hammond. This is the man that made loads of pool games. So Jeff Hammond Pool, yes. Is that right?
Jeff Hammond was the Formula One guy.
Formula One, sorry. God, look at that. I've just completely lost all my kudos.
That's it. Credibility gone.
Spitting at the sound of my name. But yeah, Sonic Race was a really bizarre game. I remember on the Amiga, you just have to drive around this really weird kind of track. And
they were like roller coasters. It was my first ever experience of Vertigo while playing a computer game.
It was quite scary. It was very well done. Yeah, same Operation Wolf, a cracker that was.
Yeah. I actually even remember that, so yeah. Hooray for that.
All right, so and then it's Defender of the Crown, War Song, Dungeon Master, The Immortal, and Ultima 7. There you go. That completes the list, but go check it out on Pocket Gamer anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought we could go about that for ages, so I was kind of hurrying it along.
I didn't notice. I don't know any of the last five games you mentioned there. I feel like I need to go and spend an hour on Wikipedia.
Yeah, go and wash your mouth out with Wikipedia.
We have to start calling Damien the professor.
Yeah, Professor Damien. Yeah. Professor Retro, we'll call him.
Okay, so Flashback we've done. That's it. We think it's a good, bad, potentially libelous thing. Fantastic.
Okay. Well, while we're on the subject of iPhones and things potentially coming about, there have been iPhone update rumours recently. I've just got the news story up and I'm reading it now to refresh my memory. But yeah, trying to get the new iPhone coming out. So
that's how boring you are. Oh, you are boring. Bored. Yeah.
So, 600 megahertz, apparently.
Ooh.
32 gigabyte memory boost. Well, hard drive space, I suppose.
Is this rumours, or is this confirmed? Is this like from an Apple press release? It's not from Apple, is it? This is some guy.
It's rumoured. It was rumoured from the Chinese website yphone.com.
Oh, that's one of my favourites. That.
Yeah, they found a listing for it. But the rumour is very specific in what it lays out. So all of these specs seem to, the consensus is that they seem quite plausible.
This rumour is so dull, but it could be believable. Is that what we're saying? It's the most.
Yeah.
Oh, it's yes.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. And apparently Apple is expected to confirm everything in June.
Okay.
June.
So I'm sorry to continue in this horrendously dry vein of statistics and, you know, details about the guts of the iPhone, but what is the iPhone's current clock speed for its processor?
Don't know. About 10.
10,
it's
right.
About
7.
300. That's a postcard. Right. First person to email in wins a free game. Or something. Yeah. We should know that, really.
Possibly. Anything
that we knew it and sounded quite smug and knew all the specs.
Like a phone message, really.
The only reason I ask is that if it is 600 megahertz and the current one is 300, which is, I wasn't brave enough to say that myself, but I did have it in the back of my mind, honest. That's potentially twice the beef of the current iPhone. So what's it going to be used on? Is it going to be for games? Because then there's the whole problem of, you know, alienating all the current iPhone users and whatnot. Or is this going to just be, you know, for other system operations that it's going to be running? Some new fancy teleportation device that Apple's come up with or something like that?
My feeling is it's games. I think there's been a real change of focus from when it first came about. I think games are such a big part of the iPhone now that I think it probably is geared towards that. I don't think it needs that extra power if it is geared towards games. Incidentally, I think the iPhone is capable enough. But that's an interesting point, though. Could the fragmentation issue arise again on the Apple because people have differently powered devices?
Yeah,
I'm not so sure.
It will arise, but I don't think it's going to arise because of this. I mean, it's a bit like saying, "Oh, my PC's got an NVIDIA graphics card, or mine hasn't, or my clock speed of my PC is twice as fast." That doesn't necessarily mean your game's different, it just means you've got better graphics. I don't think it will make any difference to the game experience, other than maybe they can throw more, you know, they can like vary the number of pixels thrown at the screen by just monitoring.
Yeah, it's just monitoring. It's just wondering whether or not it would become, you know, this there would be like a two-tiered app store, you know, where there's certain games that certain iPhones can't run. That would be.
But a DSi,
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I don't think it'll happen now. I think that will inevitably have to happen, like, you know, Succession. But I think they're deliberately not wanting to do that at this stage.
Yeah,
you know, they've just got to strive the community up. I think the last thing it needs is to be separated. Although that would enable them, rumour expanding, to put these premium pricing in, maybe, for your premium games.
Yeah.
I don't think so, though. I reckon when they get a different screen size and when they get maybe... Because the camera as well is another thing, isn't it? Which is pretty widely accepted as truth, is that they're going to have a front-facing camera. So you can get a conference, which maybe everyone wants to do. Although... Apple, I was discussing something the day how I was saying that's a bit pointless, isn't it? Video conferencing, though. Look, nobody really wants to do that, do they? And they kind of pointed out, well, nobody really wants to put apps on their phone until Apple kind of made it sexy, and now they all are. So
yeah,
maybe Apple will save video conferencing.
Yeah, possibly. Potentially.
I had exactly the same argument with my girlfriend the other day. She was saying the same as you were saying, that it's a pointless technology and nobody cares about it. But it's just because it is so fiddly now, and it. You know, I think the perception is it's expensive and it's difficult to get up and running. But yeah, I think if anyone, and I said, this is exactly what I said to her, if Apple does it, then it'll take off. Because exactly. When Apple does something, it's simple and fluid and it's nice to do.
If I was editor of Video Conferencing News, I'd have that as a headline. So you can have that as, you know, editor of Video Conferencing News. Apple to...
I'm buying the domain name right now.
It's it already exists. There's everything. Okay, cool. So you think that's a rumor that's so dull it is true. Let's just say one last thing on this. I know I talked about before I go is on that. I don't think it's Y phone. I think it's an example of this verbing. I think it's WeiPhone.com controversy. I reckon that's just what it is. I think people just said Chinese. It's Wei phone. It probably means something in Chinese, but I think it just says WeiPhone.
Well,
that's even duller.
In our first podcast, we've hit an amazing low so far. So let's talk about things exploding. And
can you insert things can only get better at that point?
Yeah.
If we leave a couple of seconds gap, can you just? That'd be great.
Yeah. One. Okay. Two. Right. Okay. Rest assured, listeners. Yeah, sorry, I'll not
let's
rest.
Let's ignore the rest of the topics that I've laid
out
for
us. Let's
do
that.
Zune Gaming, and I'll tell you why. I'm going to go in turn. I'm going to tell you why I'm ignoring them. Zune Gaming, because I don't know anything about it. I just spotted it and thought it looked like an interesting headline. Well, you know, next week when we're much more prepared, we'll discuss things like that. I don't like the fourth wall. I tear it down. There is no fourth wall. It's like the Berlin Wall. I got rid of it.
Like Hasselhoff,
we've got roofs here. Hey, we're not bad. Sorry, that's an English joke. I was going to get that outside of Yorkshire. So you're going to Zune Gaming there, Rob? No. Don't just chuck that aside.
We can't. We can't just glaze over Zune Gaming. It's going to revolutionise the industry. Snort.
The reason you should chuck it aside is not because it's not interesting. It's because it's not true.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I think it's been. Zune is the iPhone beta, and beta I mean beta, like the crap version that came out before the iPhone. They wanted, there's talk about Zune becoming, you know, which has failed, singly failed to take any sort of part of the MP3 player market. They're talking about turning that into an iPhone, like the next version, and having games and apps and all sorts on it, but. It was all leaked from some Twitter from Microsoft. But apparently the Twitter was about something far less interesting. It was like a new version of Windows Mobile or something. So, and I think at that point you can probably glaze over and fall asleep. No Zune Gaming coming in the immediate future. In fact, that's a story we should run.
It's not gonna happen. Yeah. So that's not happening. The other thing is boring. DSi piracy. This was a story yesterday that came out. Kotaku went first. We went... Destructoid went. It's just about a new cart, basically, that like an R4 cart that people can pirate with. And we'll see about that. I mean, us being honest, members of the video game industry, we're not really interested in that anyway.
The thing that is quite interesting about that, though, is that it broke as news yesterday. And I mean, being an upstanding citizen who buys his games off the shelf. I do know nothing about. I mean, if I could pirate games, I probably would. but I just can't. I'm just not technically minded with these sorts of things. And also, I'm going to cut that out of the podcast because we can't be saying these sorts of things. But the thing is about it is, it's apparently not news. Apparently, there have been carts available since day one with the DSi, according to various unscrupulous members of our forums who indulge in these sorts of things. So yeah,
of course it was.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Was the R4i? Yeah. Was the first one. Which came out on day one. I think the story is that this one's a bit more sophisticated because the problem is with these new ones is that the like with the PSP, Nintendo's now going to start having firmware updates that it can broadcast to the device, which it didn't have before. And that's going to make it more difficult for people to manufacture effective R4 type carts. But this one's apparently better. Although yesterday, on the same day that news kind of broke, and I don't know how new or fresh that news was, but on the same day that broke, Gamma Sutra ran an interview with the developer of an anti-piracy software for the DSi, saying that he's going to conquer this. You know, it's a constant arms race, basically, with these people.
Yeah.
I think that the pirates will always find a way around it, and then the people will always find a way to thwart the pirates temporarily. What the guy said, this is interesting, I'm not going to bother getting the quote up, but I'm just going to give you the gist of it. He said that he doesn't ever expect to beat piracy, and that's not even what he's trying to do. He's just trying to make the pirates' lives miserable. He's just trying to make them work for...
What a spiteful fellow.
Well, exactly. The harder work, the less effort... Yeah, I mean, the less fun it is. I mean, I guess... Yeah, it depends how much money people make out of this. If you make it hard enough, then the somebody's always going to crack it. But the harder it gets, the less people are going to bother taking it up. I mean, if getting dodgy MP3s off the internet was a lot harder, you know, then less people do it. I'd imagine because of Bidec, obviously.
I mean, I think the key to stopping pirates is to make your core service more appealing. I mean, if you look at Apple and the number of people that had jailbroken iPhones who've now, you know, rejigged their firmware so that they're back on the legal stuff and are just concentrating on the App Store. The reason they're doing that is because there's now a far greater variety and broader span of quality available on the App Store. If Sony or Nintendo were able to provide a channel that was delivering the same quantity of software that was keeping people happy, then people would be much less inclined to pirate software, I think.
That's true. Yeah. I actually think the key to being pirates is cursed treasure, but that's that's what Disney taught me. But still, okay. So pirates.
Important use of the word parley.
I've just seen something on the App Store literally today, which I wanted to mention very briefly because I think it's kind of interesting. On the iTunes Store and the App Store. One of the things people going on about the App Store or publishers and developers, and probably rightly so, is that it's always dominated by the lowest common denominator. So if the charts had free games as well as paid-for games in, as in one chart, it'd all be free games at the top. As it is, it's all the lower-priced games at the top, and people complain that, you know, there's no way of getting a £5 game in top charts and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so people have been talking about different ways of sectioning up the charts. I've just seen, which might have been there for ages and I might not have noticed it, but a new little kind of widget appeared in the music section of the iTunes Store, encouraging to search in lots of different ways. I mean, maybe it's been there for ages, but it just looks like something. It says new on it, so maybe it is new. It just shows Apple kind of starting to take this sort of stuff into consideration. Admittedly, this is music, but I think, you know, we might start to see soon, and you heard it here first, this vague rumour, a sectionalised chart. What do you think of that?
Yeah,
news making.
That means I could just go straight to the 59p one, and I wouldn't even have to have the other ones clogging up my iSpace.
You'd filter out anything above 59p.
It'd be worse, because it wouldn't even have a chance. I wouldn't even see it. Although, actually, it tends to be the case that when I go to the App Store, I'm looking for something particular. So I use the search function to get to the game anyway.
You are quite certain, if you said. It's often said about you, Rob.
Yeah, I'm a searcher.
Yeah, they are going to have to do something, though. I mean, even just to... I mean, it is a legitimate problem, definitely. And, you know, I think enough developers are making enough noise about it now. And also, you know, on the user end, there are people that do want to be able to actually use the iPhone as a replacement device for a PSP or a DS. And those are the people that are looking for your $4.99 and $5.99 games. So, you know, if those aren't easily visible in the in the charts, then that needs to be addressed. But something that I've noticed is that I tend to be able to come across those titles more easily in the iPhone's app store application, as opposed to using the app store on iTunes, because they, you know, you can just press more and you get the next 25, and you keep doing that with each menu, and you can browse it a lot more efficiently and a lot more quickly than you can do on the actual the Mac or the PC based version.
Okay. Yeah, I always go to the App Store. So.
I'm just looking at top 10 now, right? And 6 of the top 10 are 59p. All top 4 are 59p. And then it goes £1.19 for Top Gun. And Peggle's in at 6, £2.99. And then the bottom two, 9 and 10, are both EA titles, Need for Speed Undercover and Tiger Woods PGA Tour, both at £5.99. So forget what I just said. It's all nonsense. In fact, six out of 10 are... Admittedly, the ones at the very top are 59p, but there's four more expensive games in there. It's four price points on display. That's pretty impressive. I wouldn't have it for me at £6.
The other thing to remember is that for every one £5.99 game, there's probably seven or eight 59p games released. So
that's true.
You know, like we're probably at the end of a reasonably good run of top tier titles, and you know, if you were to give it another week, where there's, you know, these devs need to sleep sometime.
You know? That is true. No, that's true.
Was it recently? Was it Game Loft? They released Siberian Strike, and it was one other game, and at, I can't remember what it was at, but about £3, but within a couple of days, they'd cut the prices right down.
Yeah.
Thus annoying immensely all the people who bought it at the higher...
price management.
Yeah, and in general, there's a bit of a buzz on our forums as well, with people getting a bit kind of pissed off, for want of a better expression, about having lost out on a couple of quid, which isn't much, but I can understand, you know, if they discount it so quickly.
Well, my favourite thing about pricing, and this is a new phenomenon, I think, or a relatively new phenomenon, you know, there's always little wheezes and scams that publishers come up with to make their game seem, get higher on the App Store, seem better value. My favourite thing has to be Flight Control, which... has and since day one been 60% off full price, has never been sold above 59p or whatever, you know, 99 cents.
Yeah.
And it says still 60% off full price. It's like one of those sales for sofas. You know, those sofas that are always half price.
So yeah.
Always
get,
the Officers Club.
It's the Officers Club, closing down sale. Happy time was it closed that place.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. It's an old trick. It works though, I bought it. But But the difference in price in the App Store is so massive. Like so £5.99 being the highest one, and then 59p being the cheapest, other than free. That's 10 times more.
I know, so you've got between that, you've got £1.19 and £2.99.
Yeah, you do, yeah. I mean, you have them in between, but it's amazing that... Because I don't think the games that are £5.99 are ever... Or probably in some cases, but I don't think, as a rule, they're 10 times better than the ones that are at the bottom. So I think
EA haven't made a game that's 10 times better than Flight Control.
Yeah, that's what they need to do to convince me that £5.99 is a sensible... pricing strategy if they are in the top 10, but...
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is one of the great things. I mean, obviously, on the one hand, it does mean that you get burned from time to time, but it does also mean... I mean, this is the fundamental... democracy that is the App Store. You know, talented devs who don't have much clout or in terms of reputation or brand power or name or anything like that, or don't have a very strong license to work with, but do have fantastic coding skills and game design skills, and can make a brilliant title like Caster, for example, which I think is a brilliant game, which is only, I think, a £2.99 game. But if it had been made by EA or if it had been made by Gameloft, it would definitely be getting sold for £5.99, you know? Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a great thing for developers, obviously. I mean, that much is clear. But it's also a great thing for us because, you know, I probably wouldn't be inclined to try a lot of these first-time IPs if they were the same price as the more established IPs like Tiger Woods or whatnot, you know?
No, that's so true. Obviously, you can 10 games the price of one. You're going to, you know, I think that's probably what's happened so far, is people have been trying 10 games. So it's going to be interesting how that holds up.
Yeah.
We go. Anywho, yeah, so there you go. A non-exclusive possible thing in progress on the App Store. yeah, so what's up next, Rob? You're in charge.
Well, I tell you, we're going to talk about what we've been playing. Because even though yesterday in conversation I said I hadn't been playing anything, so I couldn't talk about it. Actually, I have. I downloaded Bloons and I've been playing that. I'm not going to talk about it first. But what have you you guys been playing?
Can I start? That's me pulling rank on you, Fraser. Is that all right?
No, no.
It doesn't matter.
Off you go.
Fine. though I have actually been playing is too tame a word for it. Obsessed with three titles actually in the last couple of weeks, which have affected my productivity slightly. Certainly in the train journeys I used to work on, I'm now playing avidly. I've been playing Peggle, which is just phenomenal. It's just awesome. Has anybody else played that yet? It's
played it on other formats.
Yeah,
I've never played Peggle.
Oh, you must get this game. Must get
crack.
Okay.
It is like crack. Basically, if you've never played it before, it's like pachinko in Japan. And if you don't know what that means, it's basically it's this game where you fire a ball into a field of pins. Field? Yeah, screen. Screen of different colours and shaped pins and stuff. And you have to bounce the ball around the screen, clear certain coloured pins and get bonuses and try and catch the ball at the bottom. It sounds really basic, but the way it's been produced, the polish is just so amazing. It's so much fun. You can get through a game in just a couple of minutes. It's so kind of Moorish. The way the challenges are set up, you've got these little gurus who help you. There's this guy who helps you do a better shot, and this is the guy that gives you an extra ball. I don't know if I'm describing this very well. My enthusiasm is quickly coming through.
I'm buying it right now. It was the phenomenon of about 2 years ago when because it was a PC game first, and then it was available on iPod. You know, just the old iPods used the scroll wheel to play it, which is actually a really good control method. And it was massive. Probably about 18 months, 2 years ago, and then it's just kind of made its way to every platform since then, and it is ridiculously addictive. And since then, I think the most insightful thing I've heard anyone say about it, is the reason it's so addictive is because it's, and this kind of demeans the player in a way. It makes the people who play it sound stupid, but it's just the way it is. It's because of the colours and the lights, and it's the it's the reward, it's the feedback. Of it, because you fire a ball and then it's just, and basically you fire a ball and it's random. There's very little skill involved in that game because it'd be impossible to calculate the trajectory beyond a certain level of complexity. So, I mean, you can do it to a certain extent. It's like pool, you can fire it and it'll bounce off in a certain direction. You can go, right, okay, well, it'll do that and then it'll do this. But most of the game exists in a kind of level of complexity that no human could be expected to be able to calculate. So really, it's mostly just, you know, oh, this looks about right, and then you just watch the ball bouncing, you know, back and forward. But it hits a bonus peg,
yeah,
just often enough to make you, to kind of hook you in. It's like a fruit machine. It is. Constantly giving you rewards and making you go, oh, another one. And when it does give you a reward, there's fireworks fill the screen and like nice sounds. And that's how it works. That's exactly it.
That's a very good definition. I think the difference between this and like a fruit machine is that you actually win in it. Whereas someone explained to me how gambling's so attractive because it stimulates a certain part of the brain where you get random success. But where it hooks you is where you don't know if you're going to succeed and you keep losing. That's where these things work. Whereas if you won more frequently on fruit machines, people wouldn't be as attracted to them, apparently. Yeah. Whereas this, you win, you know, yeah, as you say, any idiot can win. Thanks for that, Rob. That's great. I do like the flashing lights and pretty colours. It's lovely. But I think that's awesome. So
well, hire a mobile disco for the next company meeting and just sit you in front of it.
It is. That's great. I just thought of a new thing we should do next week. We should do a regular guess the tune or something. We should play something over the podcast from one of them. Some sounds from a game and people have to guess.
It's quite a good game.
I could see that one.
It's a very back in the Zeisbol ones. I was going to play this. Because when you succeed in a Peggle, it kind of plays Ode to Joy, which is, and it's very uplifting at the end. It's sort of celebratory. And you just have to play on again just to get that pat on the head. So I'll be through soon. So that's one thing. That has surpassed my previous addiction, which I probably will return to shortly, which is far more difficult. But similarly simple to access and short gaming, certainly with me anyway. is Flight Control, which obviously, judging by the fact it's been at the top of the charts forever, a lot of other people have played. But that game is just amazing, and its simplicity and its production values and just the way why it hooks you in. You're basically just landing these different aircraft on like three different strips: a helipad, a runway, and a small runway, and you've basically just got to, with your finger, draw a flight path for planes that are coming in from all over the screen and kind of land them without them smashing. The graphics are really basic, the controls are really basic, and all that happens is you get more and more planes and it gets a bit frantic. But it is the most addictive thing I've ever played. Just that one more go mechanic is just so amazingly powerful.
It's
I understand, Fraser, you're actually the worst person in the world at it, aren't you?
I suck. But I still can't stop playing it. I'm just hopeless at it, but it is brilliant. It's a design masterstroke, just the idea. And the fact that nobody, it's like one of those amazingly simple ideas that when you see it and comprehend exactly what it is for the first time, you think to yourself, why the hell didn't anyone think of this sooner? You know, why didn't somebody come up with this idea before now? Because it's so wonderfully simple. And again, I have to reiterate what you said there about the presentation and whatnot of Flight Control. It's just, it's absolutely brilliant. You know, it's got that really sort of kitsch 50s kind of, you know, back when like going on a flight wasn't a disgusting easy jet trip from London to, you know, Newcastle. Back when flying was like, you know, the sort of thing that men in white suits and women with strange hats did. You know, it wasn't for common folk.
Really,
you know,
around all the way from London, travel your international jet setting.
Yeah, cool. Right enough. Yeah, but also before I talk about what I've been playing this week, going back to what you said, Chris, there about having people guess, we're going to do that this week because we don't have any music for the podcast yet. And I've come across, via a thread in the forums, actually, where somebody requested something musical in the forums. You can go and search for it, listeners, if you're interested. Something really, really cool from the pocket gaming days of yore. And it might make a good theme tune. So I'm going to play it at the end of the show, and anybody who knows what it is can write in and boast about how clever you are. Okay?
Surely, like a prize or something.
Yeah, or we could give you a prize. That'd be even better, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you can go to the house, Fraser, and play Flight Control and let them win.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. Yeah, I could let them beat me at Flight Control and then openly mock me so that they get twice the enjoyment. Okay,
that sounds good. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're my boss. You can do that if you like. Anyway, you know. What was I going to say? What I was playing, yeah, Word Foo and nothing else. I can't stop playing Word Foo. NG Moco have done it again. It's just brilliant. I don't know if you haven't played it. It's basically you get given, I think, 7 or 8 letters, I can't remember, and you can use them any number of times, so you can repeat them, you know. So if you've only got one S, you can use it any number of times within one word. And the aim of the game is basically just to get as many words as you can within a time limit. And the really, really brilliant aspect of it is that you can upload your scores to Facebook or Twitter, Facebook Connect or Twitter, I should say. And I really don't think that I'd have that much interest in this game if it didn't give me that little ego boost where I know that I've just beaten somebody who I know their high score, you know, where I can post it online, and not only do I know, but everyone else knows how amazingly good I am at coming up with words, which, if I'm completely honest, half the time are random because you're just frantically pressing the keys in the last few minutes to get anything you possibly can. But
with the Facebook thing, does it automatically, I mean, when you play a game, does it automatically upload your score to Facebook?
No, you have to choose to do that. At the end of the round, there's just a little thing comes up and says, you know, upload your score or what, and you can just choose whether you upload it to Twitter or to Facebook. I've uploaded my score to our Pocket Gamer Twitter account 2 or 3 times, and I was quite disheartened actually after I did that, because I was convinced that I was going to be the world's greatest Word Foo player, having invested way more time into it than I probably should have done. And then I went online and had a little look at some other people's scores, and there's people getting double what I had and whatnot, so I'm still not quite done with it. I need to be at least higher than 10,000 before I'm going to give up, but it's like crap.
I don't want to go into stages, but isn't that the problem with these top charts and stuff? And it's like, I think it's every game's all get a top 10, get a, sorry, get a scoreboard in there and see how you compare, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I think where it works, like you say, is when it's your friends and stuff. But like,
yeah,
when you're in a scoreboard and you're like 60,004, I mean, it's not particularly motivating, is it? I mean, that's the problem with, like, with flight control. I know you know, your maximum score is about 12, but
28. Thank you very much.
But, sorry, yeah. Well,
yeah, my dad got that for me.
I'm in the 120s or something like that. But when you kind of see that the top score is like 6,000 and you just kind of look at it, it just kind of almost makes you want to stop playing. It's kind of one of the reasons I held back for a bit. I thought, I don't want to know that I'm that rubbish comparatively. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. Sorry, that's
no. No, I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons that I was so, like, this is going to sound terrible, but because Stuart Dredge is such an incredible whiz with these sorts of games normally, these word games, and I saw that he had uploaded a score, or I'd assumed that it was his score that had been uploaded on our Twitter page, because I'd just been trying to beat his this other Facebook game that's, I can't remember what it's called, Word Something on Facebook, that he's got a pretty high score on as well. And I was, yeah, that was the point where I was like, right, I have to beat that score. And I've since beaten it by quite a bit, but I mean, he's obviously not been playing it, if it even was him in the first place. But if it was a community where it was people who I actually know, then yeah, because I mean, even if I do manage to get my 10,000 self-imposed goal, you know, as soon as I go and upload that, I'm going to discover somebody who's got 20,000 or 30,000 or yeah, more, you know. So, but yeah,
well, that's what Facebook and Twitter gives you, isn't it? It, you know, enables you to see what people that you know have done and to beat them. But it's Stu's made that point, actually. He wrote an article about it for us a while ago, that the future is local multiplayer and not huge multiplayer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's true.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although I tend not to compete with anyone because I'm always rubbisher. Even in a very small group, people always beat me. Other people are just more competitive than me, and so it upsets me. I give up. I throw up my hands. Although I do want to start, because I was playing Wordfeu a while ago, and I learned about this thing where you can have it set it to kind of upload your scores to Twitter, and I didn't put it on because I didn't know how it works, and I didn't want it to do it automatically, and then for my scores of like 12 to go up on Twitter, and people to go, what the hell have you been doing?
Well, yeah, that's 12. The thing with Wordfeu, because I mean, for every time you get a decent score, you know, in between that you'll probably get five scores where they're less than a tenth of your best, you know.
Yeah, it's like, it's just down to the letters you get in the first place, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
one of those games where I look at it bitterly and go, I can't do anything with these letters.
The really clever thing is that you can change the letters throughout the course of the game by making words that are not immediately obvious or that are more than five or six letters, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you get the option to flick one of the lettered cubes.
So the better you are, the easier it gets.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, that's one of the complaints that I'd have about the game is that sometimes when you get the option to flick a letter over, it'll flick over, and because it is completely random, it'll come up with a letter that you already have. And seeing as you can use any letter any number of times that you want, having a double of anything is wasted letter opportunities, basically. So that is a bit annoying. Yeah,
the first few times I played it, I didn't realise that you know, you could just press the same letter repeatedly. So I just, and it seems to me much more logical the way I originally thought it worked, where each letter that you can see on the screen that you can only use once.
Yeah, lots of like that. Yeah.
So that's what I used to do, and then one day I realised that you could use it more than once. But I don't think, yeah, I think that's a flaw with the game. The fact that you can use letters repeatedly, it makes it slightly easier, I suppose. So it would be a much more difficult game without that. But it does, it makes it senseless that, you know, you can have double letters.
Yeah.
I suppose it forces you to waste a die. I guess that's just part of the difficulty of the game. It is a great game, though.
It is. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's got all that lovely NG Moco polish lavished all over it as well, which is cool.
Where do they get that polish? You think they should make that available, shouldn't you?
Yeah.
Same place EA get their polish. Game polish.
Wait, the EA have polish?
Yeah, yeah, very polished. That's what they always say. FIFA, it's not as good as Pro Evolution Soccer, but it's very polished. I wrote that review about 8 times.
That's true.
Yeah, they're the polished ones. I've been playing Flight Control, which I like a great deal, and I've been playing Word Foo as well. But the other one I've been playing, because this game generated a huge list of comments, 3 pages long, and it's balloons. So today I thought, right, I'll check that out, because obviously people like it.
Oh, I don't know, that's a sign. Comments, not so they like it. I think Carjack Streets had quite a lot of chat.
That's true. But funnily enough, the people that commented tend to actually quite like it, so...
Yeah, it was the controversy. But, yeah. You know, for there to be controversy, some people have to like it, some people...
Yeah.
Balloons, you could... It'd be difficult to hate it, because it's actually quite inoffensive. It's kind of like Worms, where you just use the strength direction of an arrow and you fire it at some balloons. Seems quite good. I'm only 10 levels in, but yeah. But it seems to typify iPhone games, or a lot of the ones that I download anyway, in that it's very nicely presented. It's very good, but it's not particularly amazing. I think there have been a few games on the iPhone that I think are really great, and Flight Control is one. Zenbound, I think that to me that's the pinnacle, because it's so completely new and so completely original, and it's nicely presented, and I think if that's the game that, you know, if on the iPod Touch adverts where they have the games to show you how great it is, that I'd just have that. That'd be the only game I'd have.
Zenbound. Yeah,
it is the game that I always show people who have never seen an iPhone game before.
Yeah.
It's very polished.
Yeah, and there's nothing commercial about it either. There's nothing corny or cliched about it. It's just completely new and fresh. I love that game. I want to marry it.
Lovely.
Somebody said that they want
on that bombshell.
Yeah, somebody actually wrote in the forums that they want Carjack. They want to have Carjack Streets as child today. Jesus. So you're not alone, Rob.
I wanting to marry inanimate. It's not even objects. Just software. Can't even hold it in my hands.
Well, it's an Asbo. Before you can say before you can name it, Carjack Streets.
Yeah, cool Streets. There's an update coming for that soon. It's supposed to be a lot better when the update comes out.
Well, let's not get started on
code.
That.
Yeah,
maybe we should review games when updates come out. Oh, hang on. Sorry. I haven't got time to talk about that this week. Let's
let's talk about that never. Yeah. So where are we?
There we are. Well, we're about an hour into our conversation. And
so
it's a good time for Jenny to wrap it up.
So will I play us out with our Guess the Song game, and then our potential theme, yeah, Guess the Song potential theme stroke competition.
Yeah. I think Rob has to say thank you to us for aiding him in his quest to make a podcast for us.
How gracious of you.
I was actually going to say something as well.
Convention. It's what happens in podcasts. I've heard it before.
Yeah, I would... So first I want to get clear about this. Fraser, are you going to dub this song over the end and we're not going to hear it?
No, you're going to hear it. I'm going to play it so we can all hear it. And, you know, if you guys know what it is, then don't say.
No.
That'd ruin the competition.
Yeah, it really would, yeah.
Okay, well, that's... Because, a song is a nice way to end a podcast, so before that happens, I will accede to Chris's demands. And thank you both for talking to me for an
thought
hour.
A song.
That was my pleasure, Rob.
Mine.
don't mention it.
Absolutely, yeah, anytime. In fact, I'll do it again next week if you like.
Yeah, I'll meet you back.
I'll pop in as well if that helps you out. I tell you. So it's all right. It's just another one you owe me. Don't worry about it.
Excellent.
Okay.
Something else at the end of podcast. Sorry, Fraser.
No.
The other thing you do is that you say to people who are listening, if you like this, go to iTunes and give it a rating. And also, don't forget to visit pocketgamer.co.uk.
Yes, and also, we will be starting a new section in the forum where you can discuss everything that we've attempted to discuss in this podcast and all the others that we do from here on out.
And suggest stuff to talk about next week.
Yes, that too. Right,
okay,
sorry, Chris. No, go on.
Right, I would stress just give us a good rating. Like Rob said, give us a rating. But to be honest, if you're going to slag it, it's pointless. You might as well just ignore them.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's no good to us. So, you know, just keep it yourself.
Yeah. I second that. And also, one of the guys on the team, Spanner, he knows Kung Fu. So just bear that in mind.
With knives. He knows knife Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Kung Fu with knives.
Right. So, this is a song from a very old pocket gaming game from way back in the day. And if you know it, then write into our forum. There will be a new section created tonight, and you can go and post in about it there. Okay. And we haven't decided what the prize is or even if this is a proper competition, but we're just calling it that to make you more interested for the time being. So here we go. Okay, that was it. Okay. That's your snippet. You guys have any ideas?
It rang a bell.
Yeah?
But I don't know. As soon as we go off air, I'm going to demand that you tell me.
Okay.
Was it something by Werner Herzog?
Yes. Yes, you've totally ruined it now. No, it wasn't.
It was Herzog's Fly, wasn't it? By Werner Herzog and the Herzog Ensemble.
Yeah, they played it on the Berlin Wall in 1989. No, the answer to this is already in the forum, but it would take a little bit of sleuthing for any potential, competitor to find it out. So, yeah,
all right.
It's out there.
The truth is out there.
Yeah.
Go and find it. Go and find the truth.
Go and find it, indeed.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.